Good morning and welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Kathleen Sabo. Earlier this week, Congress failed to pass a spending bill necessary to fund the federal government and keep it running, leading to the shutdown of all but what have been deemed essential services. Today, we'll be talking about how the government shutdown is affecting New Mexico and New Mexicans, what we can learn from it, and what we may be looking at in the future. Joining me in the studio is Rob Nicoleski. He's the editor-in-chief of Capitol Report New Mexico and NewMexicoWatchdog.org. Joining me by phone from Washington, D.C. is Michael Coleman, reporter with the Albuquerque Journal Washington Bureau. Welcome to you, Rob.
Thank you.
And welcome to you, Michael, from Washington, D.C.
Thanks a lot.
Yes, Michael, so you're in Washington, D.C. during a government shutdown, and you're a reporter. So you're looking for information, for stories. Give us a sense, please, of how you are going about your job right now.
Well, it's been a little bit strange because some of the members of the New Mexico congressional delegation that I cover some of the staff are furloughed. So from a communication standpoint, it's been a bit challenging. But, I've gone over to the Capitol. Yesterday I was over there talking with Michelle Lujan Grisham about what's going on. I caught Steve Pierce on his cell phone to talk about where he is on this. Basically we're just trying to get whatever information we can, however we can. So far I've been able, I think, to get a pretty good picture of at least where our guys are at and where they're trying to go.
Do they have staff with them at all right now? I know there's mandatory spending, so Congress gets paid and is there,
right.
But do they have any staff?
Some of them do, some of them don't. Steve Pierce furloughed his entire staff. Michelle Lujan Grisham is doing what she's calling rolling furloughs, keeping some people on, some people off. Our two senators, Tom Udall and Martin Heinrich, both furloughed about 30 of their roughly 40 employees, so they're kind of keeping a skeleton crew on. It really just depends. And then Ben Ray Lujan kept his entire staff on, so it really just depends from office to office.
Well, but how does it depend? Where's the funding coming from for the staffing?
Well, that funding, I guess, is deemed essential, and each congressional office gets a certain budget, and so they can make the determination whether to keep staff on or keep them off. In Representative Pierce's case, for example, he thinks since the government shut down, he thought on principle it was only right that he shuts his whole staff down. Ben Ray Lujan on the other end of the spectrum says, we've got this money available to us. We have constituents who need to come in and need our services, so he's keeping everybody on. It really is just a case-by-case basis.
All right. So we've talked about congressional staff, but backtracking a bit, when we talk or hear of a government shutdown, what does it mean? What is actually happening or not?
Well, not a lot is actually happening. Congress is still showing up and reporting to work. But, as you know, many, many federal programs across the government are shut down. The EPA is shut down. In New Mexico, 11 national parks and monuments are shut down. But at the same time, people are still getting their Social Security checks and Medicare benefits. There are provisions in the law that say, essential services will continue. But there's this whole process they go through to determine which are essential and which isn't. But in general, when you look around Washington, just sort of physically out on the streets, it's a lot quieter. A lot of people are staying home. Again, across federal agencies, people are, lights are out, and they went through this whole shutdown procedure earlier this week on Tuesday when this thing went down. They had to come in the office, go through these procedures, turn off the computers, and leave.
I went to law school in Virginia, and I have a lot of friends who work for the federal government, and it was interesting to see their Facebook posts and other things. They thought they would have X amount of hours, but they ended up having very little time to just get in, get out, grab their plant and a few essential papers.
It was a real
scramble,
right. Yeah. And then they did have to come in, and each agency set up established procedures in the days heading into the shutdown. Here's what we have to do in the checklist. People, like you said, people would literally come into the office. One of my friends works for the Department of Education, said it was, about an hour and a half or something.
Yeah.
They had to get in and get out.
Very brief.
Yeah.
So, Michael, what is the cause or root of this shutdown, the first in 17 years?
Well, basically, I think, just about anybody that's been following this has heard that it's about Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act that went into law or kicked in this week as well. And, the Republicans have, the Democrats are saying the Republicans are sort of holding the government hostage over this. There are a core group of Republicans in the House of Representatives who are unwilling to pass a so-called continuing resolution to keep the government open without doing something to Obamacare, either delaying it a year, stripping out the funding. So that's really been kind of the crux of the issue right now. The Democratic-controlled Senate has been urging the House to pass what they call a clean CR to keep the government running, meaning just let's pass a bill with the money to keep the government running and, you know, forget about Obamacare for now. They haven't been willing to do that. There was a meeting last night at the White House with the congressional leadership. It didn't go anywhere. So now it seems that the debate is shifting toward this upcoming debt ceiling debate. And Speaker Boehner said last night that he wanted to try to get a grand bargain that would basically incorporate a deal that would cut spending, raise the debt limit, get the government back open. I think you're going to see the Obamacare element of this sort of shuffled off to the side.
And that's October 17th, that deadline.
Correct.
for the debt ceiling. All right. And I know we'll dig in more to lots of that. It's a rich topic. But let's bring in Rob Nicoleski. Good morning, Rob.
Hi.
Hey, I read in your Capital Report New Mexico bio that you are a three-time Emmy Award-winning television anchor and reporter who now covers New Mexico politics from the Roundhouse, our state capital. Tell us a bit, please, about the organizations for which you are now working, Capital Report New Mexico and New Mexico Watchdog.org.
Yeah, I've been working here in New Mexico. I moved here in 2010. And New Mexico Watchdog, Capital Report New Mexico, at that time was funded by the Rio Grande Foundation, which is a libertarian think tank here in Albuquerque. Back in January, the funding kind of got shifted, and now I'm no longer affiliated with the Rio Grande Foundation. I get my funding through the Franklin Center for Government Integrity. And that's a group that's got reporters all across the country, and the main focus is taxpayer spending, looking at waste, fraud, and abuse. And I also cover the Roundhouse. I have an office in the Roundhouse.
In your recent blog posts, you have been taking a look at how services and places in New Mexico are being affected due to the shutdown. Is there a general answer to that question? How is New Mexico being affected?
Well, it's kind of a good news, bad news situation. The good news is that the vast majority of people in New Mexico are not affected by the government shutdown. The bad news is that there are a number of people, because of the fact that New Mexico is so heavily reliant on federal dollars, there are a lot of people who are affected, and maybe we're more affected than the average state. But as far as the running of state government, there hasn't been a whole lot of effect as far as, you know, the running of the from Santa Fe. Now, there has been, probably the area that's been hit the hardest has been civilian employees over at the Air Force bases and also the White Sands military base. I mean, we're talking about 1,000 people who have been furloughed over at Kirtland here in the Albuquerque area. There's a couple of thousand people who have been furloughed at the other military installations as well. But again, the good news is that Los Alamos National Laboratory, which is very large, and so Sandia Lab, they have not been affected by the furlough.
Is it they have carryover funds? Is that what they're using?
Exactly. So all of their employees are still going into work. Now, that may change if the shutdown keeps dragging on.
Well, and we'll dig into that a little bit. If you would like to join in our discussion about the effect of the government shutdown upon New Mexico, there are several ways for you to participate. You may email comments to callinshow@kunm.org. You may post comments on the Call In Show webpage at kunm.org. You may call our local number, 277-5866. That's 277-KUNM, or our toll-free number, 1-877-899-5866, with questions and comments. Tell us, is the shutdown affecting you in your work or daily life? How is it affecting you? Now, Michael, we just talked briefly about how Sandia and Los Alamos National Labs here in New Mexico can weather a bit of a shutdown. But tell us, as much as you're able, where are we in this saga? How close are we or might we be to ending this impasse? I mean, are we looking at October 17 now because of the debt ceiling issue?
I think so. All indications today, that's what's happening. There, you know, there was some hope that there was going to be able to be some sort of movement over the Obamacare issue. And, you know, the White House was extremely adamant that they weren't compromising on this. They say that, you know, Congress has passed this bill. The president signed it into law. It's the law of the land. They're going to do it regardless. So I think that the Republicans have started to concede, and especially some moderate Republicans who are in some potentially vulnerable districts have started to urge their leadership to go ahead and either pass a clean CR, you know, just to kind of get this off the table. But John Speaker Boehner, you know, seeing sort of political liability within his own party, has been unwilling to do that. So I think what, like as I said earlier, what he wants to do is create some sort of grand bargain. So I think I don't have a crystal ball, but what it appears that there is no, immediate possibility of this shutdown being stopped. And so I think that the debate's probably going to stretch into the weekend, maybe into next week, start looking at the debt ceiling, and and the Republicans will start demanding some spending cuts. And so I think you'll see the negotiations go there. So this may be with us until mid-October.
You know, we saw certainly in the first days of the Affordable Care Act how many people jumped online to try to check out enrollment possibilities. So maybe that's being taken note of. In addition, there are many polls out now, and whatever, you know, merit you give polls, I mean, it looks like the Quinnipiac poll found 72% of Americans oppose the government shutdown, and a growing number put most of the blame on Republicans in Congress. Do you think that's being taken note of?
Absolutely, yeah. I do. I think that these guys read polls constantly, and they know if they're losing politically, they start looking for another answer. I think our own Republican Congressman Steve Pierce, who's very conservative and very adamant about cutting spending and a huge opponent of Obamacare, has kind of been a little bit contorted on this whole issue. You know, he voted for a couple of provisions that would keep the government open if they basically gutted Obamacare, but then he came back and told me a couple of days ago that he wasn't wanting to shut down the government strictly over Obamacare, and then he raised this fairly arcane issue of whether Congress and their staff get subsidies under the exchanges that they're forced to now enroll under. You know, Congress and their staff have to go to Obamacare. That was something they wrote into that law. So today on his Facebook page, and I just tweeted this, he's talking about the debt limit. He's shifted this to, the debt limit, and we've got to get our spending under control, and, kind of picking up that, Boehner theme of some sort of a grand bargain. So it's been interesting to watch Pierce's evolution on this issue.
Okay. Well, our phone lines are starting to fill up, so let's go ahead and bring in our caller, our first caller. It's John from Albuquerque. Good morning, John. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning.
How would you like to add to our conversation today?
I just would like to make a comment that the statement earlier, the idea about how we are affected by things like this, and that most New Mexicans are not affected. I'm affected as a human being emotionally, knowing that other needy people have been affected, and that's an effect too. I think the idea that the only effect is whether one is getting more or less dollars individually is a really destructive way to think about these kinds of things.
Well, and John, thank you so much for your call. And that's an interesting point, because even in the government, we're seeing there are sort of like special niche arguments and reasons why this is happening, and you're pointing us toward looking at the good of the whole, of the collective. That's what I'm getting from what you're saying.
That divides things rather than connects things and says, I'm not directly affected.
Yeah.
Well, I know I'm not the only human being that is affected, knowing some of the effects on really needy people that are happening in this state.
Yeah, well, thank you, John, for bringing up that point this morning. And let's go to our next caller. It's Glenn from Jemez Springs. Good morning, Glenn. Good morning, Glenn.
I was listening to the Diane Rehm show this week, and she was having her panel comment, and one of the women said 35 Tea Party people are the main hostage takers in this, even holding hostage some of the Republicans who don't like what's going on. And it made me think about No Child Left Behind, brought in by the Bush Republican people. A lot of people don't know that the BIE, Bureau of Indian Education, and their headquarters are now down to bare-bones staff, cooks, maintenance people in the schools throughout the state, furloughed. This is just such a sad commentary. 800,000 federal workers. What in our Constitution allows for 35 people with their agenda to shut us all down? I just find this totally astounding. Thanks for commenting.
Absolutely. Thank you for your call. Rob or Michael, you want to comment on anything we've heard from our callers?
Well, I think
go ahead, Rob.
Well, I was going to say that, this is, hardball politics and high wire politics going on in Washington. There are people that on the left who are upset about this. There are people on the right who feel that the Affordable Care Act was forced down their throats or forced down the Republicans' throats. It was voted and passed without any Republican approval in Congress. There are people on the left who don't like the Tea Party people, and there are people on the right, Tea Party people, who don't like the Affordable Care Act. And they say, you can take it for whether you agree with them or disagree with them. Their view is that the Affordable Care Act, that the president was able to delay the employer mandate, and so why can't they delay the individual mandate? And it's a gamble that Republicans are taking, and they're trying. They tried yesterday and the day before to pass emergency funding for things like the national parks, the NIH funding for Washington. It didn't get the 2/3 majority to get through. So that this is where we are. So you've got Democrats who are saying the Republicans aren't negotiating. You got Republicans saying, "Well, we're willing to negotiate, but the president's not." So it's a classic political stalemate. Like I said, it's a high wire act.
You're listening to the KUNM Collins Show. I'm Kathleen Sabo, and today we're talking with Rob Nicoleski with Capital Report New Mexico and NewMexicoWatchdog.org. We're also talking with Michael Coleman, Albuquerque Journal, Washington Bureau. If you would like to join in our discussion, you may email comments to collinshow@kunm.org. You may call our local number, 277-586, or our toll-free number, 1-877-899-5866, with your questions and comments. We're going to take a very short break, and we'll be back to hear from Michael Coleman and our listeners.
It's the 27th annual El Rito Studio Tour, Saturday and Sunday, October 5th and 6th, from 10 a.m. to 5. Enjoy a weekend of art and culture with 20 stops, including the Community Mercado. View pottery, retablos, tin, weavings, jewelry, photography, paintings, and more, plus food and live music to round out the weekend. For a map and more information, visit elritostudiotour.org. That's elritostudiotour.org. A message from the tax-exempt Rio Arriba County Lodgers Tax Fund.
Find Burnco Bernie at Bernalillo County's many fun events in October. Take pictures with Burnco Bernie and post them to Instagram with the hashtag Burnco Bernie. Find all the events at burncobernie.com. A message from the tax-exempt Bernalillo County.
Support for KUNM programming comes in part from our contributing listeners and by a grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Welcome back to the KUNM Collins Show. We're talking today about the government shutdown. And Michael Coleman, you're in D.C. You wanted to comment a bit on what our callers have been talking about.
Yeah, the first caller who was pointing out kind of the human impacts in New Mexico. I mean, everybody, a lot of what we're focusing on in the media is, the closure of parks and, people can't go camping and things like that. But, one example of where this shutdown could potentially affect people, especially people in a poor state like New Mexico, is with the Supplemental Nutrition Program for Women, Infants, and Children, or WIC. They're saying that right now they can continue supporting that program under the shutdown based on funds they have, and this is for about 9 million mothers and kids under five who rely on this for food vouchers and infant formula. And the USDA is saying that most states can continue this operations for only about another week or so, and then after that, all kind of bets are off. And so, that's just sort of one impact. And the caller also mentioned tribal governments are being hit hard. They get money for things like court adjudication and other programs. So you know, in New Mexico, you know, people will eventually be feeling that as well. So, I mean, there is definitely a human element to this that, you know, people will start to feel in time.
Mm. We have a website comment from Michael Freed. He owns a commercial building in Santa Fe. He has tenants with contracts with the federal government. He says he's mad as hell that the Tea Party has a grip on the GOP and the, quote, government by crisis, unquote, is no way to treat the economy. You can read his full comment online at KUNM.org. Let's bring in our next caller. It's Bill from Los Lunas. Good morning, Bill. Good morning, Bill. Now, Bill is no longer with us. Let's, Rob, there is a line of thought that this shutdown could be beneficial to New Mexico in that we will see how reliant we are as a state on federal dollars. So what might come of this observation? Some good?
Well, I think maybe there probably isn't much upside in the short term. But maybe in the long run, there might be a little more discussion about diversifying our economy.
Are you hearing this from our state lawmakers?
Yeah, but we've heard this in Santa Fe, especially from Governor Martinez's office for a while now.
Well, saying we cannot.
And also John Arthur Smith, a Democrat, noted fiscal hawk, has said for a long time that we have to diversify our economy, especially in a government that seems to be governing by crisis, you know, almost in an ad hoc sort of way. You need to have an economy that is more less reliant on federal dollars.
Well, don't also oil and gas revenue from oil and gas leases fill up our coffers to a large extent?
Right.
And can that continue to happen during the shutdown?
Well, I wrote a story yesterday, and I talked to Wally Drangmeister from the New Mexico Oil and Gas Association, and I asked him. The direct question I asked him was, since the Bureau of Land Management is not granting any more permits, how much effect will that have, and what kind of time frame are we talking before it starts having an effect? And he said that they're okay right now, but if it goes on a month or more, then we could start feeling the pinch because, again, you know, the oil and gas industry really is a driving force of the New Mexico economy and the general fund.
Okay, Michael.
That was a good story, Rob, by the way. I thought that was excellent. And you know, one of the interesting points in that story was that the BLM permitting process is already as slow as molasses.
Yes.
So, it could, we'll feel it eventually, but nothing immediately because they don't move immediately.
Yeah, I think that's probably the takeaway right now is that for the most part, New Mexico looks like it's going to be okay for now. But as Michael pointed out, if this thing stretches out over a month or a number of weeks, then things maybe get dicier. But then, you know, again, as Michael pointed out, I mean, the politicians' antenna is very highly tuned. And we might see if this thing goes on a little bit longer, we might see some movement one way or the other.
Movement meaning?
Movement mean maybe, you know, the N-word, negotiating, you know, from the Democrats or the Republicans, you know. So, but it's hard to say right now. I mean, but, you know, for right now, it's okay. But we're kind of, you know, walking on eggshells at this point.
All right. Let's go ahead and bring in our next caller. It's Mike from Albuquerque. Good morning, Mike.
Yeah, good morning.
Hi.
Hi. I work for a nonprofit named Adelante, and we have a contract. What we do is employ people with disabilities through a variety of different methods, and one is a federal contract at the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center, FLETC, in Artesia. We've had to furlough 50 people, most of whom have disabilities. They've gone home. We don't know they don't know whether they're going to get paid for the time, obviously, that they're not there. And in addition, that's where training happens for a lot of our law enforcement people, border guards. And FLETC, at government expense, flew home several hundred people because the training wouldn't be available.
Mike, I've read somewhere that some people might receive retroactive payment once this shutdown is over. Is that anything that you are hearing or have knowledge about?
We have no guarantee that will happen. And then we've got people who are both hourly and salaried. The salaried people we have to keep paying. the hourly people we don't, but we have no idea whether we'll be able to get any funds to pay those people.
All right, Mike, thanks so much for your call. Michael Coleman, you wanted to weigh in on that issue?
Yeah, I think there's some real question about that. Historically, when we've had these government shutdowns going back to 96, from what I understand, everybody got paid eventually. You know, they passed some sort of retroactive bill to do that. I think that they will this is just me speculating. I think that they will – that will when we end this thing, that the general consensus is that will happen again. But there's not – uniform agreement on that, because you know there's so much concern about the national debt, and there's such a cost-cutting mindset in the House. Some people who may say, you know, that's money that we've saved, and we're not going to do it. So I don't think there's any guarantee of that, but the general consensus is that most people will probably get some sort of back payment.
But what you're saying is there has to be a legislative action for that to happen.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Let's go ahead and bring in our next caller. We hope to have Bill back with us from Los Lunas. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Kathleen. Good morning to everybody. You know, when people stand up and exercise their freedom of rights and speak out their freedom of speech during protests, they're pistol whipped, they're baton whipped, they're thrown in jail, they're thrown in chaining dog pens and stuff like that. But when people who finance the destruction of the people's government, like the Heritage Foundation, the Koch brothers, and so forth, destroy our government and hurt our people through starvation, nothing happens to them. So that is totally wrong. These people should be thrown in jail. Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much for your call this morning, Bill. Let's go ahead and take our next caller. It's Nigel from Santa Fe. Good morning, Nigel.
Good morning, Kathleen. And to everybody else that is there. You must forgive me. I've come in a little bit late in your conversation. I just heard you talking about, when I came in, about health insurance, health care, and the Tea Party. I guess my main thing is that, you know, they're shutting down the government here, all an objection to a health care plan that proposes to bring health care to every citizen in the country for a somewhat reasonable price. And I'm like, why are these Tea Party people so opposed to this? And, I mean, I think I have an answer, but is there anybody there that would care to answer
that?
Well,
there are some specific things that have been noted. And, Michael Coleman, I think you can fill us in a little bit about what some specific objections are.
Well, I think that a big part of it is the individual mandate that, you know, a lot of these people feel like, you know, people should not be compelled to get health insurance if they don't want it. You know, the flip side of that argument is that the rest of us, you know, have to pay if people, you know, you get sick and you go to the emergency room, for example, and, you know, there's indigent care that's paid through tax dollars. So, I mean, I think that's really kind of one of the key elements of what, you know, some of the Tea Party people have against Obamacare. There's a lot of concern. You know, a lot of people think that it's going to wind up costing people more money than they're currently paying for health care. I think that, you know, the studies on that depend from state to state and individual to individual, but, you know, I think, you know, Rob may have something more, you know, to say about that, being in New Mexico and talking to conservatives. You know, what do you hear, Rob?
Well, specifically in Washington, you know, what the Republicans are saying is, and we touched on it earlier in the show, is that President Obama delayed the business mandate so that, you know, businesses don't have to pay their fine pay their penalty for another year. And so Republicans are linking that, saying, well, if it's okay for businesses, why do individuals have to, you know, pay the penalty this year? And then also that's also tied to the complaints that a number of Republicans have that the Affordable Care Act, if it's a great law, should affect all the members of Congress and their staff, that they shouldn't get subsidized on that, because that was another thing that the president did this past year. He said that, okay, we're going to make an exception for the current congressional staff members. So those are the two things that that a lot of Republicans, Tea Party Republicans, are latching onto. Now, at the flip side, even within the Republican Party, there's some debate about that. There's Daniel Henninger, for example, who's a conservative columnist for the Wall Street Journal, has echoed the sentiment of a number of people, saying, well, if he doesn't like Obamacare, but it has passed, and if it's a really bad law and it's not going to work, let it collapse under its own weight. And then when it does collapse, you can point and say, well, this was the president's idea. The Democrats supported it, and Democrats passed it without any Republican votes. So let it collapse under its own weight.
Well, let me visit an earlier part of what you just said. So if businesses are in actuality getting a year delay on any penalty they might accrue for not participating, why aren't individual citizens getting that same delay?
That's precisely what John Boehner and a number of Republicans are saying.
I mean,
I think that the White House would contend that the business element of that was a little bit more complicated for, you know, that there were going to potentially be more glitches and problems. I think that they felt that they had the individual mandate ironed out a little better, and then that they were ready to go. And I think politically that if, you know, the White House had caved on the individual mandate as well as the business mandate, it would have been seen almost like a white flag or something coming up. And you know, I was at the White House last week and listening to David Seamus, President Obama's chief guy on healthcare, talk about the individual mandate, and he was stressing, yes, there are going to be glitches, but this thing is ready to go. Exchanges are set up in, you know, the majority of states, and, you know, we've got to get this thing going, So I think politically it would have been a disaster for the White House to concede another year. Republicans would disagree with that. They're pointing to, you know, glitches and failures on the websites and things that are happening right now, and, you know, we'll just have to wait and see how it plays out and see who's right. You know, was it a mistake to let the individual mandate kick in and get these exchanges going? Or, you know, ultimately, was it good business? We'll see.
Well, and, you know, I did read somewhere, Michael, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the penalty the first year is rather small. I'm not saying any amount doesn't affect some people, but then it escalates from year to year if you're not participating. Is that inaccurate?
That's the way I understand it.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's $95 is the minimum. And then it's if you're signed up for individual insurance under the health exchange.
Okay, let's go ahead and bring in our next caller. It's Carlos from Chimayo. Good morning, Carlos.
Good morning. Thanks for having the conversation. You know, I think I'm an independent contractor for 25 years, and have basically swam through the banking crisis scenario and. I think all us independent people that are out there still paying taxes and Social Security, still paying while these idiots are having a schoolyard fight out there, and let's just not pay federal taxes as long as the shutdown is going on. Let's all get on board. I mean, what the hell is going on in this country? My God, it's shameful.
All right. Yeah, Carlos, thank you so much for your call today and for expressing your opinion. And you know, there are polling numbers out there that saying that Americans are having an extreme amount of distrust in the fact that our government can govern at all. So where do we go from here, Rob?
That's a really good question. And I think what's interesting from our discussion this morning is Michael bringing up the fact that with each passing day, it looks like this thing might be linked to the debt ceiling debate. So I don't know. I mean, I really don't know where we go from this point. I think in many ways, this is kind of an outgrowth of a fundamental philosophical difference between conservatives and liberals. Liberals believe generally that government is a force for good, and that they don't look necessarily askance at a large government program like the Affordable Care Act. Conservatives don't. They're distrustful of a large government and think that the larger that large government often has a one-size-fits-all philosophy that doesn't work. And I think that's really kind of what's at the heart of this thing. And I don't know how you can really resolve that. And especially now when you've got a technologically advanced society like ours with the internet out there, people almost kind of hang in their own echo chamber. Conservatives listen to conservative talk radio. Liberals listen to themselves. And there's a lot of talking to each other, but there's not too much talking between the two parties or between the two elements.
That's absolutely true. And, you know, I've been in Washington for 13 years. And, you know, when I first came here, you know, even going back to the early days of the George Bush presidency, you know, you'd have Republicans and Democrats getting together, holding joint press conferences, trying to find areas in which they could agree, you know, passing some bipartisan legislation. You know, I remember Ted Kennedy and Pete Domenici working with each other on some things, and they had personal relationships, and, you know, you just don't really see that anymore. The polarization is incredibly intense. They don't know each other very well on a personal level anymore, and I think that sort of all bleeds into the politics. And just, I think what Rob was saying was also true, is that, you know, we have all these different methods of communication now, and talk radio and the internet, and, you know, people sort of set up their own camps and just don't want to talk to, you know, people on the other side much anymore. And you certainly see that in Congress. Going to the question of where we, you know, go from here, you know, specifically with respect to the shutdown and the debt ceiling and all that, I think what President Obama and even Republican leaders would like to do, so they quit governing by crisis, as the president keeps putting it, is reach some sort of a big bargain on the debt ceiling, raise the debt limit, cut some spending, and just not keep kicking this can down the road 6 months or a year or whatever. You know, everybody remembers a year ago around New Year's when, you know, we had the fiscal cliff and all this stuff, and so here we are again. And I think best case scenario, I think everybody would be happy to see, is if they could reach some sort of agreement on these fiscal issues, so they could just get back to the business of legislating. You know, let's talk about immigration. Let's talk about other issues other than this constant drumbeat of fiscal crisis.
Governing by crisis. Well, people might not be talking to each other in Washington, D.C., but we'd like to talk to you here if you would like to join in our discussion about the effect of the government shutdown upon New Mexico, upon you. There are several ways for you to participate. You may email comments to callinshow@kunm.org. You may call our local number, 277-5866. That's 277-KUNM, or our toll-free number, 1-877-899-5866, with questions and comments. Is a shutdown a good way to handle ideological differences? How would you end the impasse? We'll take a short break, and we'll hear from you when we come back.
This week in This American Life, a man is recruited by government intelligence. His job? To test the security of banks by trying to rob them. And his handler tells him,
do not stay in a bank for longer than 5 minutes. And if you get arrested, stay silent. We'll have you out within 24 hours.
So he gets arrested. And then he learns his handler doesn't actually work for the government. This week.
Sunday afternoons at 4 on KUNM.
We have the technology. To make the world's first bionic man.
You know about bionics from science fiction and pop culture.
But we'll tell you about real-life bionics.
Their blindness is reversed with a chip implant.
And organs are grown for human use.
Join us for Becoming Bionic from IEEE Spectrum Magazine and the National Science Foundation.
Sunday morning at 11 on 89.9 KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Collins Show. I'm Kathleen Sabo, and today I'm joined by Rob Nicoleski, editor-in-chief of Capitol Report New Mexico and NewMexicoWatchdog.org. Joining me on the phone from Washington, D.C. is Michael Coleman, Albuquerque Journal Washington Bureau reporter, and we're here to talk to you today. We're going to go ahead and bring in John from Albuquerque. Good morning, John.
Thank you, Ms. Sabo, for taking my call.
Absolutely.
A couple of points I'd like to make. I think we are where we are at. If you just go back to the aspects of redistricting, people are more extreme gets more extreme. The backroom deals, we're going to give you this district for that district, and you get people who are unwilling to compromise because there is no thoughtful discussion at the point of what people are elected. I'd like to hear what your guests have to say about that. But also at the same time, I think that everybody has this fool's gold mentality that no matter how you cut and slice and dice America, people have this self-prescribed self-entitlement. And I don't really believe we have a government shutdown right now, because if we did, everybody would have equal shared sacrifice of truly not working today in terms of working for the government. And until that happens, I don't see that much of this stuff gets taken care of. And until redistricting gets taken care of, how is this ever going to get corrected? If you guys could comment on that, I'd like to hear what you might have to say.
John, thanks so much for your call today. Rob, you want to go first?
I think John makes a good point about the redistricting and how you see more of that, especially in the House. However, as a counter to that, I mean, who's been the big lightning rod from both sides in, throughout this, a lot of this debate? And that's Ted Cruz, and he's a senator. So he didn't come from a gerrymandered district in Texas. He was elected by the entire state of Texas and won rather handily. So I think it goes back to what I was saying earlier about the philosophical difference. I mean, there's a lot of people in red states that don't like big government, and people in blue states do.
Michael?
Yeah, I think the caller makes a really good point about redistricting, and as Rob pointed out, especially in the House, you know, in a lot of these districts now, the way they're comprised, you know, the only election that the Republicans have to worry about is their primary election, and it's getting, quote-unquote, primaried by a more conservative candidate than them. So, you know, in a way, the only danger they're facing is from the right. I think a very small amount, maybe 25 or 30 of the House's 233 Republicans are at risk of losing their seats to a Democrat next year. So, you know, I think that redistricting point is a good one with respect to this debate and kind of where the Republicans are. But, you know, Rob also makes a good point about Ted Cruz that, you know, he's a statewide senator from Texas, and he's in a lot of ways kind of driving the show here.
I want to set up our next call here a little bit by noting that I saw online a little Jimmy Kimmel bit. They went out into the street and asked people, what do you prefer, Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act? And sadly, you could almost predict who was going to answer which way based on how they looked. And so I want to get to our next caller here, who looks like we just lost. If we can bring Michael or Mikhail back, that would be great. If not, we'll go to our next call in the meantime. Let's go ahead and take John from Albuquerque, please. Hi, John.
Hi, Kathleen. Hi, everybody. I just want to say, isn't this disaster capitalism working beautifully for the people that pay our government to work for them? We don't really have a democracy. We have a government that's bought and paid for by lobbyists. And this is the result of that. That's all I got to say. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Although I guess that some lobbyists are connected to business, and business doesn't like uncertainty. And, you know, the markets are nervous about this as well. So,
well, when we saw Obama said, you know, this time, Wall Street, you ought to be scared. So fill us in a little bit. Why?
Well, you have to look at everything through a political prism here. And naturally, the Obama administration has made its decision partly based on principle, because it believes in the Affordable Care Act, but also based on politics. Democrats and the Obama administration think that a government shutdown, the more painful it is, the more it makes Republicans look bad.
All right. Let's go ahead and bring in Shawnee now from Albuquerque. Shawnee, I'm glad you're back with us. You'd like to add to our conversation.
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning.
I think the Affordable Care Act is an excuse. The real agenda of this so-called Tea Party, Treason Party, Hater Party, whatever term you want to use for them, is that the president's skin color is not the same as theirs. They went to Washington to destroy President Obama, and this is the way they're going to try to do it. They don't care if people have insurance or not. They don't care if poor people have medical care or not.
Well, you know, and Shawnee, I've certainly read that this is what we can boil everything down to, and it would I suppose it would be a sad commentary, but that's in fact what you're saying, that this all boils down to that?
That is 90% of it. That's what the whole Tea Party seems to be about, is we hate this president.
Well, let's go ahead and let's see. Michael, what are you hearing in Washington, D.C.? Can we boil things down to this level?
Well, I really try to avoid, simplifying things to that effect. I mean, I'm sure that, among Americans, there are those who have a problem with the president's skin color. You know, you certainly never hear that voiced publicly in Washington. Obviously, there'd be political suicide to say something like that. And I think for the majority of people, the vast majority of people in Congress have philosophical differences with this president, not a personal hatred or racism. Again, I'm sure that there are Americans who, that's their problem. But, I think the big problem with people here in Washington is philosophical, and it's about priorities and budgets and where we're going to spend our money.
And on a similar vein, I mean, it wasn't that long ago when George W. Bush was president, and he didn't have to go very far to hear people on the left call. It's very common, to hear and see protests where it was Bush Hitler was often
right.
used. There were lots of people on the left, lots of websites on the left that referred to George W. Bush as a chimp. So,
right.
I mean, I think that's unfortunate, and we touched on it earlier in the show. I think that's what happens when you've got an internet age where people can. I'm writing a column in the Santa Fe, New Mexican this weekend, and one of the things I say is that right now your ID is just one click away, and you can hide behind an avatar or a username, and so it's this instant flow of or instant reaction that people have, whether they dislike or love one side or the other.
All right. Let's go ahead and bring in our next caller. It's Michael from Albuquerque. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely.
I appreciate it. I just want to preface my comment by saying that I'm an independent voter, and I did not vote for Donald Trump, although I do support many of his programs. I think it's time that the Republican House and the White House get together about passing a budget. But in the near term, I think we should definitely avoid the I think the way that we can do that is the same way we did that about a year ago, which is to have sequestration. Nobody likes it, but it was a consensus opinion at the time, and I believe that cutting the military and cutting all the bloated Washington, D.C. federal budget is long overdue, and we can all get together around that.
Okay, thanks so much for your call, Michael. Anybody want to comment on the benefits of sequestration?
Well, you know what? In a weird sort of way, the caller makes a very good point, because sequestration is almost like you're handcuffing the Democrats and the Republicans and throwing them overboard, where they both have to sink or swim by themselves, because sequestration is this blunt instrument. That's not a good thing, but at least it's something that both sides have to take some responsibility for.
And in case people have forgotten, give us a little brief explanation of what that means.
Well, sequestration means that you have automatic spending cuts, a lot of them in defense, that there's no negotiation. They become automatic. And in a weird sort of way, and I guess it's probably indicative of the political situation in Washington, it does sort of work because it is such a blunt instrument.
Well, don't we have people who are affected by sequestration
sure.
as well?
Yeah, right. But at least with sequestration, you've got shared pain on both sides, and both sides can take some blame take some of the political hit.
All right, let's go ahead and bring in our next caller. It's Carol from Albuquerque.
Can I make a,
hang on,
Michael. Just real quick.
Hang on, Carol. Yes, go ahead, Michael.
I'm sorry. I just got a note. Apparently, I think I misspoke a little bit earlier when we were talking about pay and Congress and all that. Members of Congress are still getting paid.
Mm-hmm.
Staffers are not, and there's no guarantee that they will get
okay.
paid. Some of them are still working, but there's no guarantee that staffers will get that paycheck unless there's some sort of a retroactive measure taken to ensure they get paid. In the past, that has happened, but I think I misspoke. I lumped staff in with Congress, and staff's not getting paid. Just
okay.
wanted to clear that up.
Thanks for that clarification. Let's go ahead and bring in Carol from Albuquerque. Good morning, Carol.
Yes, and thank you for taking my call. I recall that when the first hearings on the Affordable Care Act opened in Max Baucus' hearing room that the doctors and nurses who were backing single payer were escorted out and insurance executives were seated at the table, and that this was done to placate the private insurance industry. And now they, of course, are opposing it because they don't want to be burdened by people with very serious conditions. And now you have a new group of people who oppose it, and those are the private citizenry who don't want to be forced to pay from private insurers. And I don't really see a way out of this dilemma. I think that these two are conflicting, and I would like to know if the panelists see any way that this can be reconciled.
All right. Thanks for your call this morning, Carol. Michael, you want to start on this one?
Can you kind of reframe that question? I'm not exactly sure what it was.
Carol, are you still with us?
I am with you, yes.
Right. So if you could clarify your question for Michael a little bit.
All right.
Please.
The dimension of the Affordable Care Act that placated the private insurers by making them the carriers for it is now coming in conflict with the mandate that people don't want to be forced to buy from private insurers. And I don't see a way of reconciling that.
I don't see a way of reconciling it either unless they took some sort of, you know, amended the law to some extent. You know, that's kind of where we are, and you know, I guess that's all I have to say about that.
Yeah, although a number of private insurers are totally on board with the Affordable Care Act. I know here in New Mexico with the New Mexico Health Exchanges, there's five insurance companies who are signing people up or signing businesses up for small businesses so they could bring people in. I guess maybe there are some private insurers who don't like the act, whether it's because they think it goes too far or doesn't go far enough. But there are some insurance companies that are on board.
All right, let's go ahead and bring in Joe, who has a point he'd like to make. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning. Yes, you know, to address the polarization that's so badly afflicting our country, I was thinking it would really help if everyone who uses the public airwaves to put on a political show or a news show would be required to put on a little bit of both sides. Maybe have the Republicans and the Democrats each have one or two minutes that they get to pick their own person to come on and comment on the news of that day, and this would apply to Rush Limbaugh and Amy Goodman and everyone, and everyone would be required thereby to at least hear a little bit of the other side, and that might help address this deep and awful polarization that's afflicting our country so badly.
All right. Thanks so much for your call this morning, Joe. Let's go ahead and bring in Madeline, our last caller for the day. Good morning, Madeline. Good morning, Madeline. Okay. Madeline is not with us. So let's go ahead and let's just wrap up between us here. And Rob, where do we go from here? We've heard so much today from callers. I imagine this is representative of what's happening around the country. Where do we go from here?
I think we're just going to take it day by day. If this thing drags on a little bit more, then I think politicians on both sides will feel it.
All right. And Michael, you're going to keep us up to date on what's happening there in Washington. And where do you think we need to go here? Michael?
I have to see, like Rob said, how this plays out over the next couple of days. I'll be keeping people in New Mexico posted in the Journal. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Michael Coleman, C-O-L-E-M-A-N.
All right. Well, thank you so much to both of you, Rob Nicoleski of Capitol Report New Mexico and NewMexicoWatchdog.org, and Albuquerque Journal Washington Bureau reporter Michael Coleman for making themselves available to our listeners. Thank you to both of you. Very informative. And thanks to our callers for helping to develop our discussion today. Thanks to our engineer, Roman Garcia, our assistant engineer, Jeff White, our assistant producers, Steve Emmons and Kaveh Movahed. And Andy Lyman has handled our phones today. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. I'm Kathleen Sabo. This has been the KUNM Call-In Show on KUNM, news and music that connect from the University of New Mexico.